Deputy Secretary Gaudemiller, how big of a test is the situation on the Korean Peninsula for NATO's nuclear deterrence policy?
I would characterize it as really a test for U.S. extended deterrence policy per se. It's not an issue in the NATO context, but the United States of America has extended its deterrent not only to the NATO allies, but to its Asian allies as well, to the ROK and to Japan. So it is in that way, I think, influential in how people around the world will look at the strength of the U.S. extended deterrence commitments. We have seen some very strong statements over the weekend, which I welcome very much, from the Secretary of Defense, from Mr. Mattis, emerging from the White House with the Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson at his side, speaking very strongly about this matter. But in addition, actions do speak louder than words. And I have been quite heartened over really the years now that these provocations have been going on from the DPRK, the extent to which the United States, working together with the ROK, has been willing to convey in a very real sense the strength of its extended deterrent commitments. And probably the most visible way it has done so is by bringing bombers forward and exercising together with ROK forces, but the Strategic Bomber Force has been an excellent instrument in that regard. But the U.S. extended deterrent, and I'd like to emphasize this constantly, not only in the Asian context, but also in the NATO-European context, the extended deterrent of the United States does not limit itself to nuclear weapons. It has to do also with the very real capabilities of U.S. conventional forces, again, in the case of the ROK, exercising and training together with ROK allies. It has to do with missile defense capabilities that have been put in place in Asia in recent years, as in Europe as well, the NATO limited missile defense capabilities. And finally, it has to do with the ways in which we exercise and work effectively with our allies to provide for deterrence and defense. We've seen that in spades, in the European context, in NATO working in recent years, and particularly since the Warsaw Summit in July a year ago, to bring deterrence and defense capability forward in the NATO-European context to address the very real concerns that we have about Russia these days, but also you see over the years the very effective way that the United States has worked together with the ROK and with Japan so that it's clear that our conventional forces are interoperable and extraordinarily capable as well. So I wanted to really stress the reality and the pragmatic operational capability of the U.S. extended deterrence forces as they operate with U.S. allies, both in Asia as well as in Europe. And I think these days it's paying dividends in the response to the DPRK, but it's an issue that requires constant attention, and clearly this matter has gotten Washington's attention, which I applaud.
That U.S. extended deterrent policy is also facing, as you just mentioned, pressure in other areas. So U.S.-Russia relations have seriously deteriorated since 2014. Where does that leave U.S.-Russia cooperation on arms control and nuclear non-proliferation?
Well, I should ask other colleagues, you know, who are working this issue actively. I'm sure Amano-san and Dr. Zerbo might have some things to say about this matter, what they see emanating from Washington currently. Again, my position here today is as Deputy Secretary General of NATO, but I'll refer only to two things. One is the great legacy of arms control between Washington and Moscow, with roots back in the inception of the non-proliferation treaty regime following the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 1960s. So there is a mighty tradition and a mighty legacy of cooperation in these areas, even from the worst days of the Cold War. And it has driven these two countries to build down the major overbuild that was a result of the Cold War nuclear arms race. The United States, for example, had over 31,000 warheads in 1967, at the height of the Cold War, the Russians, by some estimates, and I refer to the former Minister of Atomic Energy, Viktor Mikhailov, who said publicly at one point that the Soviets built up to 45,000 warheads. And in the ensuing 45 years since the NPT was negotiated, and quite rightly it was mentioned already by our Kazakh colleague that it will reach its 50th anniversary in 2 years' time, 3 years' time. Nevertheless, in that ensuing period, both the United States and the Russian Federation have brought those warhead numbers down precipitously from 31,000 in 1967 to just over 4,000 today in the U.S. arsenal. I spoke about deployed warheads a while ago, 1,550 under the New START treaty, but then additional warheads held in storage. It's still too many. It's still too many, and so clearly we will wait and see the results of the nuclear posture review that is going on in the United States at the present time. Every new president who arrives in office undertakes a nuclear posture review, and so President Trump is doing the same. But I do expect that there will be some continuity in U.S. policy with regard to nuclear arms control, and I can only hope that Moscow will take that message seriously and be willing to re-engage. I have seen, since the Trump administration arrived in office, the emergence of some new discussions in the Russian media and the Russian press about the importance of continuity in nuclear arms reduction, nuclear arms control, so I hope that that will in fact bear fruit once the Trump administration has completed their review and is ready to move forward in whatever direction they propose.
Madam Gaudemiller, this is the last question before we turn to the audience. Do you agree with Mr. Bilitz's assessment, and is a nuclear weapons ban at this point a good idea?
Well, Jacek just made mention of the NATO alliance and how it is, obviously coexists with the European Union and in a very close partnership. We're very proud of the way we've developed our good working relationship with the EU in the recent years, and particularly in the past year since I've taken this new job. For me, I've seen that partnership develop apace, and it's very, very welcome. But we are a nuclear armed alliance in Europe, the NATO alliance, and we have nuclear weapons deployed in Europe, as well as having three nuclear weapons states among the five nuclear weapons states under the NPT, so France, UK, and the United States. So, obviously, from the perspective of the NATO alliance, nuclear deterrence is an important part of extended deterrence, and it is an important part of how the alliance conducts deterrence and defense. I actually had a question, and perhaps we can further take this up, but if our Kazakh colleague would like to comment on this, I do not see the value added of a nuclear ban treaty. And in fact, I see tremendous dangers in a nuclear ban treaty because of the additional international legal requirements it imposes or attempts to impose, and really the way it calls into question at the moment the continued validity of nuclear weapons as an aspect of deterrence. I don't see value added also because it is the non-proliferation treaty regime that I referred to a few moments ago that has driven so much impetus to denuclearization over the past 45 to 50 years. And I continue to see that non-proliferation treaty regime paying dividends with regard to denuclearization. The process that occurred with Kazakhstan, Ukraine, and Belarus at the breakup of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s was rooted in the non-proliferation regime, and that these three states, including Kazakhstan, I give huge credit to President Nazarbayev and to Kazakhstan for taking these decisions, but it was that Kazakhstan would become a non-nuclear weapon state under the NPT system, in addition to working with the, at that time, START Treaty, the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty negotiated between Washington and Moscow, but with all of the countries involved, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, and Belarus, as the instrument by which nuclear delivery vehicles were eliminated from the territories of those countries. So again, I spoke a moment ago about this tremendous legacy that has bound Washington and Moscow together in nuclear arms reduction and elimination. I see that legacy not only as having a proud past, but having a very real present and a very real future. And so I don't see the value added of a banned treaty. And in fact, I worry that it undermines the NPT regime.